Amy, on this podcast, we try to always offer useful takeaways. And if you learn nothing else from us, learn this useful parenting lesson by Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 are the ultimate parent hack, the best diaper to use as soon as your baby starts standing or walking. Instead of ordinary diaper tabs, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your wild child.
Pampers Cruisers 360 makes it so easy to change your baby. Who probably doesn't stop moving just because they need a diaper changed? Just slide on to apply and away they go.
And fear not, parents. Pampers Cruisers 360 offers an up to 100% leak-free fit. And they just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we say more?
For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand. Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers cash. Then redeem your Pampers cash for exclusive Pampers coupons, savings, and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers cash has no cash value.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Fresh Take from What Fresh Hell, Laughing in the Face of Motherhood. This is Margaret.
And this is Amy. And today we're talking to Diane Bowden. She is the host of the Minimalist Moms podcast, and she's the author of Minimalist Moms, Living and Parenting with Simplicity. Diane lives in Ohio with her husband and three kids. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you so much for having me, guys.
So, Diane, let's start with the very basics. Tell us how you define minimalism.
Minimalism. So I do think it looks different for everyone. I always say that when I'm talking to whomever. I think that I have adapted more of a life of intention as opposed of every wall is sparse. I don't own anything. I have three kids. So it's going to look a little bit different than maybe a single guy living on his own. But I think for me, minimalism is really a tool to simplify my life. And it has worked so far for 12 years.
And is minimalism, are we born to minimalism? Can we learn minimalism? Do you feel like you were a natural minimalist, or is it something that you really had to think about and adapt to?
No, it was definitely something that I adapted to. So I'm sorry for anyone that's ever heard this story before, but I will tell it because it was a profound moment for me. My husband and I were in our early 20s and we were searching for something in my parents' basement. And he looked at me and said, look at these things that are now in boxes that were once your dad's hard-earned working hours. And it really struck me because I had been working full-time since I was out of high school. I did the school and working full-time thing, but I had nothing to show for it. And after we got married, I was a little bit better with my money, but I just felt like I was spending frivolously. And so I guess there was a little bit of frugality that came to mind there, but I kind of just thought, I don't want things in boxes one day. I'd rather have experiences in my mind that will last forever versus these things that are maybe just trendy or fun for a moment, and then they just end up in a box. So we never really had a conversation there about, oh, we're going to start pursuing minimalism. It was just a change of where I wanted to put our focus, or where I wanted to put my focus at least. And he was already, I haven't discovered if I think men are more minimalist than women, but I just felt like it was something we were unified on. Let's spend money on our experiences, not things. Let's work towards just a life of intention together. So, I mean, the things were actually easier to whittle away than I'm learning my schedule and my mind. Now that I've gotten rid of the things, I have the space and wherewithal to start decluttering my mind. And that I'm finding to be a lot more difficult because you have to be, it seems, a lot more intentional. And some things seem to be out of my control, whereas my home seemed to be more in my control. I can control the things that are coming in, but I can't control other people. So sometimes I feel like minimalism, or even just a life of simplicity and intention, can be more difficult once you really start to dig in.
And you really hit the nail on the head before when you said maybe it's easier for non-parents. I mean, of course it's easier for non-parents, right? There's just so much less stuff accumulating in your front hall when you're a single person living alone, or you're a couple without kids or whatever. It's when they like hit first grade and the permission slips start coming home and the birthday party favors sit on the chair in the front hall and the 18 pairs of shoes. That's when it really starts to accumulate, right? And that seems to me like that's the first part is sort of acceptance. Like, yeah, you are going to have too much stuff in your house once you have kids.
Yeah. And you can't, again, you can control yourself. So I think sometimes a lot of women I talk to, they're like, well, I can't even get my husband on board with living this way. And it's like, well, just do the best that you can with your closet, with your spaces in the household, with the areas that are more communal. Have those conversations about what those spaces look like, even with your kids. Bring your kids into those spaces. Give your husband a place where he can be a little bit more chaotic. My husband has his workshop, and that's where he can live how he wants. But in the communal areas, it's like we're all trying to exist together here. So let's try to put in to practice the best systems that work for all of us. And sometimes that's not, no shade to the home edit, but sometimes that doesn't look like your HGTV home edit aesthetic. It might just be what's best functioning for you. So, but yeah, I think with the kids, you can't control them. You can't control your husband, but you can control you and what you're bringing in. So once you shift your mindset to that, it's given me a lot of freedom.
I think also Amy was kind of starting to touch on it and I hadn't thought of it that way. I think with kids, there's a lot of passive stuff that kind of comes in the house. It's six bicycles and there were all three kids, like five bicycles, five Halloween costumes every year, five sets of Christmas presents from all the different or whatever, that there's just stuff that kind of flows.
The thing that really came to a head for me this week was the remote control cars. I was talking about this with my sister, who has four boys. The remote control cars and then the remotes that you can't tell which car they go with. And they don't really ever work so well after the day your kid receives this thing. So she has like eight cars and eight remotes that don't seem to work together. And yet, like, they were birthday presents, so she's not supposed to get rid of them. Or is she? Like, the kids' stuff is just a particularly kind of frustrating.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. I was just cleaning out my car and I found this remote control spider and the remote control to it. And it doesn't work anymore. And they got it not too long ago. And you know, I have a little space, a little limbo, as I call it, of a box that those things that aren't typically played with or maybe forgotten about, they go into that box. And then after I set a specific deadline, it's usually after about a month. If they're not asked for, I just get rid of them. For my 9-year-old, I kind of bring her on board a little bit more. But I think you're constantly assessing what needs to stay and what needs to go. And again, as your kids grow older, bring them in on that conversation. I think I don't ever want this type of lifestyle to backfire on me. But it is something that I'm constantly going through. Even the clothes, every time I do a load of laundry, I just kind of assess, okay, what do I have? And then I have a box right there of donations. So I always say it sounds so overthought, like I must be some control freak, type A person. I don't think that I am. I think it's just become such a habit in my life that, again, this minimalism idea is a tool that helps me have more freedom to where I'm not feeling the overwhelm necessarily of my things.
And I think there's the passive version, right? Stuff that's just like the barfing backpacks that are like, here's 86, you know, art projects and pieces of paper that maybe, especially as your kids get older, like, will they at some point need these for the midterm or the final? Like, I get nervous about throwing out kids' schoolwork. And there's that kind of river flow that comes in. And then I know for my family, there's also the active, which is more the sort of, oh, let's just get that from Amazon. Like everything we think of can be delivered to our door, or even just being grocery shopping and like, oh, I like that. And kind of throwing away half-eaten boxes of cereal that people forgot about. And I think for us, that is where we made a pact in January. I mean, our kind of New Year's resolution. Like, let's all have a meeting, or my husband and I have to say out loud to each other if we're going to order something off of Amazon, because we just tend, I think, to be like, you need what? Post-its? I'm like, we have 5,000 Post-its. We now, the other day we were cleaning out the kitchen and we have 3-gallon jugs of soy sauce. Like, soy sauce is not something you use by the gallon. Luckily, I don't think it goes bad quickly either. But like, why do we have 3 jugs of soy sauce? Because Amazon will bring it to our door when we think we're out of it. And I think that, does that track for you? Like, there's a easier place to stop the incoming.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do have to sit down, especially with your spouse or your partner, and say, what does it look like? Where do we want to spend our money? Where do we want to be intentional? If we need to set up those conversations, my husband and I don't talk about our Amazon purchases, but I think, again, we're into these habits where we're right. we just really...
You probably don't have as much of a problem as we do.
Well, no, but even still going through my list, sometimes I'm like, why did I think that I needed that? And it is scary. It is an honest slap in the face when you scroll back through your Amazon and see what you've spent your money and how it adds up. That is a really scary thing. I don't know. I think taking an assessment and like maybe calculating the price of the things that you wasted your money on can just help it bring it to the prefrontal cortex to get it into that space of rationality versus just like your lizard brain, the back of your brain that's just like operating because it feels good and it's pleasurable in the moment. And it's a fleeting emotion that's being filled by something that you actually don't need. You actually needed rest or food or connection. And we, I think especially as moms, we get into those habits of just mindlessly scrolling and buying. And it's like, we never really needed that. That was just to fill a void of something else that we didn't get.
We're talking to Diane Bowden. She is the host of the Minimalist Moms podcast, and we'll be right back. Margaret, exciting news. I am about to have a new baby nephew, and believe it or not, this will be my 13th nephew.
Amy, you're ready to give up your amateur status. You're a pro aunt at this point.
Our family has seen a lot of babies, and as soon as they start standing or walking, I send them all a whole lot of Pampers Cruisers 360.
Pampers Cruisers 360 don't have ordinary diaper tabs. Instead, they have a unique 360-degree stretchy waistband that moves with your newly mobile little one.
Pampers Cruisers 360 offer a gap-free fit that is up to 100% leak-proof, crucial once your baby is quite literally up and at 'em. And that gap-free fit helps prevent your baby from taking off their diaper, a habit you do not want them to get into.
You can say that again. And Pampers Cruisers 360 just got even better with a new blowout barrier. Need we even elaborate on the need for that, friends? For trusted protection, trust Pampers, the number one pediatrician recommended brand.
Download the Pampers Club app today and earn Pampers Cash. Then redeem your Pampers Cash for exclusive Pampers coupon savings and rewards.
Only redeemable via Pampers Club. Pampers Cash has no cash value. Hello, Hellions. You know we listen to a lot of podcasts that aren't our own, and today we want to tell you about a podcast that really speaks to us and will speak to any parent of a child with special education needs.
The podcast is called Understood Explains. This season of the show is hosted by teacher and special education expert Juliana Ortube, and it's all about how to navigate individual education plans, also known as IEPs.
The latest season of Understood Explains covers topics like how to tell if your child needs an IEP, and it busts common myths about special education. One of my kids has an IEP, and I found this podcast so validating and so helpful. I feel better equipped to advocate for my child's educational needs now.
This podcast is helpful for parents in many different situations, whether your child already has an IEP or you're just starting to wonder if they might need extra support in the classroom. Juliana has content for kids of all ages and for kids who are learning English as an additional language as well.
To listen to Understood Explains, search for Understood Explains in your podcast app. That's Understood Explains.
Diane, I have a big question for you about minimalism. I was reading recently Gretchen Rubin's Outer Order, Inner Calm, and I love Gretchen's work, and I'm definitely that kind of person. Like, everything needs to be neat because then I feel relaxed. But then I really stopped and thought about it. Like, she presents that as like the two of those just go together, right? The more neat your house is, the more calm you'll feel. Like, well, that's true for me. Is that necessarily true for everybody? Do people have different set points for minimalism? And does forcing your like perfect order on somebody else actually become stressful sometimes for that person? Like, is less stuff better for everybody?
I don't think anyone wants to live or desires to live in a state of chaos. And I think that someone said to me recently, it's like when I go to a hotel room and it's all organized, I just feel kind of good in there. And I was like, oh yeah, that's a perfect example. But I think about the two places where you kind of start and end your day. So one is the bathroom. When you start and end your day, you're usually in the bathroom. And so I try to keep that area as minimal as possible because it just kind of sets that intention again for the day, but also the entryway of your home. When you're leaving and you're like, oh no, I have this entire space that I have to come home and address. It's just out of control. And most often than not, I do think it's an outward representation of maybe some things going on in your life that you haven't addressed. And again, with three kids, it's not always perfect, but I think the fact that I can get in there and quickly tidy, that's what I think we are like seeking to have. We don't want to be buried under the weight of our things because it's just at the end of the day, it's so meaningless to have all this stuff, really. Like, what do we have to show for it? We have to show like hours of cleaning each week when we could be using that time for our friends or our kids or our husband or relax for ourselves. And so I think addressing those two spots, just even noticing, again, maybe someone's listening and they're like, I have no interest in doing this. Just take note if you pull everything off your counters for a month. See how you feel and then slowly add things back in. Just give it a month trial run and see how you feel at the end of that 30 days.
Let me ask a practical question. If you pull all that stuff off your counters and you find you don't need it anymore, is that stuff out of the line of sight and coming back? Like, okay, now I need, you know, I don't own a bread machine, but let's say bread machine. Is that like, okay, I can give away my bread machine because I don't make bread. And then I guess there's stuff in the other category, like my KitchenAid, which I use on Thanksgiving. I want to have a KitchenAid, but I don't need it on my counter every day. Are they different kind of categories?
Absolutely. I think that you kind of know. We know what we're using. We just aren't honest with ourselves. And I think that's the hardest thing because usually there's emotion tied up in it, or it's like, oh, I can't believe I spent the money on this and I don't use it. So I feel guilty. But time is going to pass anyways. And if we're not honest with ourselves, then we're just going to have this, again, extra weight that we don't need to carry. And I think that's, again, something that I've learned throughout my journey of minimalism or simplicity, is that I just would rather be honest and address it now than to allow time to keep going. And I'm just denying the realities of my life. And I have been frivolous before. Usually if I get really stressed out, I'll notice that I have the tendency to start online. Like I go online, I add a bunch to my cart, and then I have this thought of, I visualize myself in that outfit showing up somewhere. And then after that time, it's not new anymore. And it's like, oh, you kind of already have a t-shirt like that too. So you were just seeking this little feeling that you want to feel. So again, just, it sounds like a lot of extra work mentally, but I just feel like it's a habit at this point. But okay, so going back to what you said, so pulling everything off the counter of the bathroom or like your KitchenAid and things like that, expired products, I think you can just get rid of and you know what you're using and not. But the KitchenAid, my example would be, I have a bunch of stoneware, some really nice like Pyrex or stoneware dishes that I probably do only use on the holidays, but they are something that I am using in those seasonal times. But if you wanted to get really cutthroat, you could get rid of those things and then borrow them from someone. I am not opposed to borrowing from friends. I do it for special events. If I need a dress, I will ask my friends like, hey, does anyone have something I can borrow? And my closet's also open to my friends. So I think just getting crafty and resourceful, again, so that you can use your money on other things that actually bring meaning to your life.
I think the correlation, because I am a chaos Muppet as opposed to Amy's like order Muppet, in terms of like I go to Amy's house and it feels so relaxing to me. It's like very clean and orderly. And I'm like, I want to live here, but I live in my own crazy chaos. So I do think that you have to know your starting point. Like this weekend, we had a warm day and I went and I cleaned out the car. Like I pulled all the chairs, I vacuumed it out, and I got in this morning. I was like, I just was so relaxed driving the car. I was so happy when I opened the door and remembered we'd cleaned it. But I realized that set point of a perfectly clean minivan with three kids is not realistic for me. And so I do think that the set point is like, it's about figuring out systems. And I really like your idea of, I have every time you do the laundry, this is a practice I've tried to get into every time. And I have three growing kids. This doesn't fit you. And then I try to do it kind of once a month with the kids. Are you still wearing this? Do you still like this? Because the kids' rooms are so messy because they're pulling stuff out of drawers and 18 of the shirts they don't want to wear. And so I think that the putting those processes in place makes some sense to someone like me. Like, it's not really about getting to hotel room, but it's about cutting down on the constant, because it is true that driving a trash-filled minivan feels stressful to me, but keeping a perfectly pristine minivan doesn't feel realistic to me.
Yeah, I did this with the pantry. So oftentimes we will put systems in a place that benefit us and we will put things on certain shelves or this makes sense to me. And then we come back a day or two later and it's completely destroyed. Our work is destroyed because we are living with other people that we never gave a heads up. So my pantry, it doesn't look the prettiest. However, I have things on lower shelves for my 4-year-old and my 6-year-old. And it kind of gets less kid friendly as you get higher. But it's like, this is where they know they can come grab this bag and put it back themselves. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. This is just easily accessible to them. And I don't know. I think when I used to do things my own way, I would just get so frustrated of having to come back and tidy it back up and tidy it back up. And that just felt like a waste of time. So it really does fit whatever your household rhythm is. I think that that's what you're going
for. I wanted to ask a question about, because before I wrote down something you said, because I think there's sort of like two things that are going head to head here. You were saying before, like, minimalism, it saves you time. It makes your life easier because you have to do less cleaning. And then Margaret was just talking about, like, okay, so I had to spend 2 hours cleaning out my car, right? You had to dedicate your Saturday to getting that minivan back to one, as we like to say. And then slowly it's going to slide back downhill and you have to do it again. So I think of minimalism as like, okay, rainy Saturday, I'm going to attack this stuff. But it's something you do when you have more time, when you have extra time, because it's going to be, minimalism is an extra job on top of daily survival. So at what point, because I think you're right that it can also be something that makes your life easier, not harder, which we're all about. So when does that switch happen? And then it turns from like, here's another annoying thing I have to worry about, to like, oh my gosh, I have an extra 2 hours in my Saturday.
Yeah, I think it's just that initial investment of time. And again, you can go as fast or as slow as possible. I think for sentimental items, you might want to go slower, but then some people like to rip off the Band-Aid and just get rid of it. I'm one of the second type of people. I need to just get rid of it. But I think even if you, the minimalists talk about this, it's called the men's game. And on day one, you get rid of one thing. Day two, you get rid of two things, then three things, and then four things every day of the month. And I can't remember how many things at the end of the month you've gotten rid of, but it kind of just builds this little momentum. And that's why I think in the bathroom, where you're not sentimentally attached to things, it's easier to get that little win under your belt so that you can move through your house much more, I guess, efficiently. But also, it's not going to take you a ton of time. Your bathroom's usually the smallest room in your house too. And so it just feels like, wow, I can actually do this. And spend 15 minutes on it. Like, just chip away at it to where you're not having to spend 2 hours. Sometimes I just do that in general with cleaning. I'm like, okay, I'm going to deep clean, because I'm not a great deep cleaner. I'm better at tidying. But sometimes I'm like, okay, 15 minutes deep clean, and then I'm done. And then I'm going to take the rest of the night to myself.
But I mean, like, on a macro level, though, I mean, because you're saying like, it doesn't have to take 2 hours, it can take 15 minutes. But I'm like, when do you get 15 minutes back? When do you get 2 hours back? Like, when does it start to change into something that you gain from instead of something you need to spend extra time on?
Well, I think, again, like Margaret was saying, it depends on what level you're starting at. If your starting point is a super chaotic, near hoarder type house, it might take you a little bit more time. But I think that, again, it comes back to your personality of like, can I get rid of things in a more cutthroat way, to where maybe if I do have boxes of things everywhere, I'm just like, hey, I'm going to call up the junk truck and they're going to come take it all away. And you're getting that time back right away, versus someone that does slowly go towards it. It just depends on how much I think you do have to sort through. I don't know if I can answer that on like a general idea basis.
Because it's practical.
Yeah. We're so interested in the show always. And like, don't do this because it'll make you a better person. Do this because it will make your Tuesday morning easier. And, you know, it's going to be better for you in the long run, not because you'll be a better person. I mean, I do think that that is true for minimalism also. It's just maybe like the horizon line's a little longer for some of us.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, let's see here. So my husband and I have been married for 12 years. I would say that conversation happens like on year one, year two. And we just recently moved. So you think that you get rid of things when you move. And then we moved again the second time. And I refused to bring anything into my house that I knew didn't have a home. It was like, okay, well, of course the dining room table goes there. Of course my clothes go in the closet. But anything that was just kind of like, what is this obscure thing? We left it in the garage and we went through it together. Like, I kind of moved some boxes to one side. And then once I'd gone through it, it was like, okay, I'm going to dump all of this unless you go through it. So we just kept it there as kind of like a landing zone of, let's not bring it in here. And I think the minimalists also talk about this. The one guy, Ryan, I think he packed up his entire apartment and he saw what he used over 30 days, and whatever he didn't, he got rid of. Again, this is a single man that he probably had a little bit more flexibility there. But I do like that idea if you're trying to really get rid of things.
I really like that idea. And I think that idea, I mean, I know that when we move, it's like, okay, let's just move this box. Like, there's definitely boxes that have moved from every house and they're just still a box. It's like, why are we doing this? The box that comes everywhere. We're talking to Diane Bowden of Minimalist Moms, and we'll be right back.
Margaret, I've been at the research again, looking into metabolic health and, more importantly, metabolic flexibility, which turns out is the key to improved energy levels, better sleep, better fitness, all the things. And I found out about all this because we got a chance to try Lumen, the first handheld device that helps you manage your metabolic health.
Lumen works when you breathe into it. If you do that first thing in the morning or after a workout, Lumen measures your metabolism by measuring the amount of carbon dioxide in your breath. It's science, people. That lets you see exactly what's going on in your body in real time.
Then you use Lumen's app to get tailored guidance to improve your sleep, your nutrition, even stress management. If you're interested in figuring out the effects of different sorts of foods on your body, Lumen is a really cool way to see what's actually happening as your body burns different fuel sources.
If you want to take the next step in improving your health, go to lumen.me and use Fresh to get $100 off your Lumen.
That is lumen.me. Lumen.me and use the code Fresh at checkout for $100 off.
Thank you, Lumen, for sponsoring this episode. Amy, you know we talk on the podcast about how our crazy lives at home can lead to feeling like you and your partner are stuck in angry coworkers at the daycare mode. And let me tell you, it's happening again at my house.
Well, when you feel stuck in that slog mode and you're looking for a way to get back in touch with why you and your significant other actually are a good match, the Paired app can be a great way to reconnect.
You and your partner both download the Paired app. Then every day, Paired provides a different question, quiz, or game that will help you connect with each other and maybe even learn something new.
So this morning, my Paired question was, how do we tend to interact when we first wake up? And, you know, one of us usually sneaks out before the other one. We don't really interact when we first wake up. But a couple times a week, my husband brings me coffee before he gets in the shower. And just reflecting on that and answering that question made me realize how much I love that. What a loving act that is. And I probably would never have taken the time to reflect on that, let alone tell him so. And that is what's really cool about Paired.
There's games, there's quizzes, there's streaks. It's all fun, super light touch. But Paired is a great way to remind yourself and your partner what you love about each other a little bit every day, which is a great way to keep that connection strong as you move through life together.
Share the love this Mother's Day by going to paired.com/fresh to get a 7-day free trial and 25% off if you sign up for a subscription.
That's paired.com/fresh to sign up today.
Give the gift of connection this Mother's Day. A happier relationship starts here. Let's just say, what if there's somebody sitting here right now on this podcast episode who had a spouse that had a very different set point for what needed to be kept versus what didn't. When we, I'm thinking about our front hall closet, it is prime real estate. I live in a city apartment. I don't have a landing zone. I don't have a car. I don't have a basement. I don't have, you know, a porch. I just have my house. And so our coat closet becomes stuffed with all kinds of the broken toaster nonsense ends up in this coat closet. And we go to clean it out. And it's very hard because everything that we encounter is like, but we might need this. And it ends up being a source of conflict that I'm like, throw it out. And, you know, I have a partner who's much more, that's a little bit harder. How do you sort of come to a common ground?
Well, again, with the communal areas, you definitely need to get to an agreement in those spaces. But I can relate to you because when we first got married, we were in 800 square feet on half a duplex. And we didn't even have that entryway coat closet. It was like randomly back in the back. And it was kind of a catch-all for all of us. But as we were going through those things, I don't know, for some reason, if it's out of sight, out of mind, it is easier for me to just rationally be like, okay, we're not using it. But for like a broken toaster, well, maybe we'll get it fixed. It's like, well, why don't we get it fixed right now? Let's get it fixed or else we're never going to. And what if, it's nice to think in what ifs, but I do also think over the age of 30, we rarely it's very rare that we're becoming that what if. We should just live in the current moment. You know what I'm saying? Like our habits and cycles are pretty, I don't know, the brain is malleable. So that's why I'm here today to try to influence your listeners. But at the same time, I just don't want to keep living for my future self. I want to just live for the now. And again, if I need a new toaster or fill in the blank for the future, I often can borrow it or buy it for a similar price, but it just is taking up space that you could use now for your current self, or you can leave it empty. A lot of our new house is empty right now because I don't really know what to do with the space. And I also don't have money to furnish it. So it's just like, we're just going to leave open space and see how this evolves. But I'm thinking of my dad, who's way more sentimental than my mom. And that has been a process. But I think what's interesting, you guys should look into Swedish death cleaning. And it's the idea from this woman, Margareta Moonsen. I don't know if I pronounced her name right. But she talks about how in Sweden, they are regularly going through assessing what they have so that the future generation doesn't have to navigate that while in grief and while in mourning. It's like, I'm going to get rid of this stuff, set in these systems into place with what I want, like handed down, what can be disposed of, and just really thinking about these things. And I think a lot of people don't want to think about their mortality. That's a really hard thing to do. But for my dad, going back to that, when my aunt died, he was going through all of her stuff and he realized, oh my gosh, I don't want to leave all this stuff for you guys. So they're actually downsizing. This was a pivotal moment for him where he's like, I'm in my early 70s. I'm healthy. I want to do this now before I get sick and I can't anymore, or I leave it for you guys. So I think also just thinking about your kids and what you want to leave for them can be a motivator.
I wonder, because it's interesting about getting other people on board, because we talk a lot about how garbage starts at your front door, right? That like the things that come into your house are, whether you're taking it from like an environmental perspective or a minimalist perspective, it's just the second it crosses your threshold, it's on a countdown to becoming garbage. It's just, I mean, maybe there are some pieces, you know, I have my mother's china. I mean, maybe there's some pieces that you're going to hand down through the ages, but they're so limited. And I think we hear from a lot of our listeners about grandma or grandpa or mom-in-law or dad-in-law who arrives to every visit with armloads of stuffed animals and look what I found you at the airport and I love Sweden t-shirt that we bought on our trip. Like, what is our role in terms of controlling what comes into our house from other people? Do we have a choice over that? Or do we just say, all right, that's going to get immediately passed along?
I think that we always want to come back to the relationship we have with people, prioritizing relationship over things. But at the same time, usually when you give a gift, that moment of connection is what you're looking for. You find joy in that moment between two people as opposed to the tangible item. And so for me, once I've gifted something to someone, they can do whatever they want with it. Obviously, this is a minimalist person talking. So I understand that not everyone feels this way. And also gift giving is a love language. But at the same time, as adults, to me, you should be able to manage those emotions. So I'm thinking about like my mother-in-law. That is a hard relationship to manage when it comes to things because she is always so generous. But we've had to kind of get to the point of, if this is something that we don't use and need, then I'm not going to keep it. And my husband has had to have conversations because, again, he's closer to her. But I think you just have to navigate, who is this? Is this an in-law or is this my family member? And then we would just want to navigate it in the best way to preserve the relationship, but also be honest and also let people know that you're trying to create memories over things. Hey, maybe you can give them a list of experiences you want them to go take your kids to such and such place, the trampoline park, the movie. Like, you'd rather have that than a new, what were we talking about? Cars, these battery operated cars that die. Like, if we can try and get that through people's heads, I think that that has been really helpful in my own life. But I know it's also can be a generational thing where people don't understand.
What about when it's your own stuff? Like, do you know the old George Carlin joke about other people's stuff is junk, but your junk is stuff? And then that's the difference. So I'm thinking about, like, I can be very unsentimental about decluttering.
Gimlet-eyed towards your spouse's stuff, right?
Right. I mean, I remember back in the day, my husband and I weren't even married yet. And like, you don't need 32 t-shirts from your frat parties from college. Like, keep three, you know, like there's only 30 days in a month and you have 45 t-shirts in this, like, you have to get rid of some of them. But of course, if that eye were turned towards my like lipsticks I'll never use again, right, then the tables are turned. So how do you make sure that you, well, maybe this isn't a problem for you, but how do we explore our own, you know, blind spots over whether we might be contributing to the clutter with what we think is very important?
No, my husband tells me I do this. So I definitely do this. But I will also say it's been really helpful to me to have visual boundaries of, okay, well, if I have sentimental items, it's a pretty big box from the Container Store. And I have one for each of my kids, my husband, and myself. And any sentimental item goes in there that I want to keep. And again, maybe not every minimalist wants to do that, but this is the way that I practice it. And that's my box of, this is special to me. This is letters from my grandma. These are medals that I've won in races. This is my, I threw my daughter's like blanket that she came home from the hospital in hers. And she'll go through these things and see what's special to her once she's out of my house. But I think that's been helpful to me to say, like, you can fill this box, but then once it's full, you need to kind of go back through and keep the, don't say that everything's your favorite, because then nothing's your favorite, I guess, is what I try to keep in mind. And then with clothes, that's, I think, an area that I have a hard time decluttering because I love clothes so much. So I just don't buy new hangers. And my hangers are what I have in my closet. And then if I want something new, I usually won't buy anything new unless I sell something and make money back, or until I've waited for a period of time. Usually I try and wait 2 to 4 weeks and then I'll pull the trigger. But oftentimes, like I said at the beginning, I'm trying to fill some type of emotion with buying a new outfit that I don't really need, because I wear the same things. That's another thing, being rational with myself. I am constantly wearing like a uniform of sorts. And it's like, okay, why do I need to keep buying these new things? It just makes me feel good. And it's okay to feel good. And it's okay to spend frivolously from time to time. But I just want to try and stay within these boundaries as much as possible, because that's that acquisition cycle that we're trying to break.
Right. So how do we know? My kids are now 12, 14, 15. And, you know, there's some lingering items. Like, do you have a system for, as kids move through phases of the kind of things we're playing with, when do we know it's time to say, like, okay, let's transfer over from the remote control cars to whatever's next? And do you have a guideline around how you think about those kind of decisions? I know you talked about the bin, that like, if it hasn't been asked for a month, I like that system a lot. But is there more like, okay, we're kind of doing more video games, we can get rid of, I don't know, not video games, because we want them to be outside, but we're riding bikes more than we're doing magnet tiles.
Sure, sure. One thing that's been helpful to me, because I do think I've had a sentimental attachment with even my third child, because I know that I'm not having any more kids. So I have gifted those items to friends that are in my circle, like in the little groups that I'm in, and just so that I can see that it has a second life. And it's kind of like, I don't want to say it's on loan, but if I ever needed that back, I'm sure my friend would give it back. But it kind of just helps like detach a little bit more, because I can see it have a second life. So it's not necessarily over, because I think that's one of the things that gets us, we're stunted in not moving through the things because we're saying goodbye to that season of life. And I think that's really hard too. So
that's right. It means admitting something if you give away the Legos, right?
Yeah. And so also, I think that people that are trying to live a more sustainable life will have probably more environmentally friendly ways to get rid of things. Sometimes I will try my hardest to do that. Other times it's just like, I need this gone. This is taking up too much space. I'm thinking of you, Amy, and you're like, I'm trying to think of where you could have a bin of things that your little limbo box of where it could be. Maybe it's in that front closet. Maybe you need to declutter the front closet so that that's where your box can be on the bottom floor.
I think it is the limbo box. I think my front closet, it has become that. And now we need to go through it. And that won't be fun.
It is the limbo box.
Mm-hmm.
And say, limbo is over for you, broken toaster. You're going out. Diane, we're going to link, of course, to your podcast, Minimalist Moms. Tell our audience where else they can find you and your work.
Yes. So my podcast, as you said, is Minimalist Moms Podcast, available anywhere you can listen to podcasts. I have a book of the same title. It's more for beginners, but they're little mantras that you can just ruminate on throughout your week, like start today or just for a season. But those are just short little snippets that you can read. And then I will announce it because it'll hold me accountable. I'm hoping to start a new podcast here in the next couple of months called Clear Intentions. And again, as I said at the beginning, I have been practicing a minimalist way of life for so long now that I feel like my house is pretty much want how I want it. But now I have the work to do on my mind and what I'm saying yes to. And so that podcast is going to be more practical tips on how to have clear direction for your life. So you heard it here first.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Breaking news on the What Fresh Hell podcast. We love to see it. Diane, this was a great conversation. Amy and I are going to work this afternoon. I can feel it already in my bones. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Thanks, Diane.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talked to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of there, life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks.
Unsticking It.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.